Hi, Jeff Sachs here, Web Yeshiva, Masechet Tanit, Mishkan Sipora. Yesterday morning, there was this rainbow. I rather uncharacteristically got up and went to the early minyan yesterday morning, and as I was leaving shul around 6:30, there were a lot of people got different versions of this picture, but I think mine is the best.
Is that a picture of Ephrat?
That's the view. That's basically the view from our shul. And that's my house.
With Neve Daniel in the background.
Yeah, the Neve Daniel is in the background, but that's my that's my house.
Very nice. I've never seen it. Or maybe I have, but a long time ago, and it certainly didn't look like it did now.
Right. Anyway, so that's my house there.
Like it does now.
And this
now.
Is
it's
a rainbow.
Yeah, Yashikach, guys.
Hi, Jeff Sachs, Web Yeshiva here.
We can't see you.
No, you can't see me. Here I am. Yesterday morning, quite uncharacteristically, I got up and went to the early minyan. Not uncharacteristically, I should go to minyan, but that I should go to the early minyan. And as I was leaving shul at around 6:30 or so, as the storm was about to start, there was this beautiful rainbow over Ephrat. You see Neve Daniel in the background. That's my house there underneath, my building, I should say. And... So this I think is the most viral picture I've ever had on the interneting. But what you can't say.
Could you mail that picture to us?
I could, I guess, yeah.
I love it. Everybody else sees it, but I don't.
Why don't you see it?
No, I mean, I don't. They live there.
Yeah, well, most people didn't see it either because it was at 6:30 in the morning. You see these? There was this flock of birds here.
So let's everybody get it.
Mushroom. Anyway,
I left shul at 6:30. Also, we didn't see it outside of our shul.
Yeah, because you're much further down. The elevation is much different. It was blocked. So okay. Anyway, here we are. But I mentioned it because rain. We've been talking.
Did you say the bracha?
I said the bracha b'shemu malchut. Something pretty unusual. You don't get to say it that often. There was another one this morning. People said I didn't see it this morning though. It wasn't quite as big and bright. Anyway, we're at the bottom of Daf. I mentioned I show the rainbow on account of the fact that we've been talking a lot about rain, and today and yesterday and apparently tomorrow we've been getting a lot of Gishmei Bracha. We're at the very bottom of Daf Kof, Omud Aleph. Maseh. Remember the Gemara was talking about the kaneh and the erez and the virtues of each. So now the Gemara says, maseh sheba, here, second last line, maseh sheba'u Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. That's what our Gemara says. The Nusach and our Gemara, the protagonist of our story is Rabbi Elazar by Rabbi Shimon, meaning Shimon bar Yochai. There are other nuschot of the Gemara. There's a parallel version of this Agadah in the Avot Rabbi Natan. There it's Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. It's a different character. But since the Bavli says that it's, or at least our version of the Bavli says that it's Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, we're going to stick with that. That's our story, and we're sticking with it. That's our nusach, and we're sticking with it. Oh, I'm sorry, David. I forgot. When I left the room, I went out to get a glass on my own. On my own cheshbon. Out of my own pocket. In order to toast the memory of your dear father, Zichrono Livracha, who was indeed a very great man, whose memory should be a blessing for all of us, that for whom... teaching and learning and parenting is important. So it's his third year at site that we're learning Le'uli Nishmato. Everybody else will take a down payment from David for a L'chaim and a piece of sponge cake. But David, say a word about your father.
For those who don't know, my father was a educator. He wrote over 20 books about education. He taught thousands of teachers over the decades. And so therefore impacted the lives of probably millions of students. His last 10 years or so, he was living in Ephrat. He very much enjoyed the company here. He, so yeah, that's about it. I just is missed, and but his presence is still very much here.
Okay, l'chaim, l'chaim, l'chaim. Baruch Hatzah Adonai.
Tomorrow should happen, Aliyah.
Everyone's invited to pour yourself one if you have it. Drink it if you have it. So Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, the son of Shimon bar Yochai, well, we know quite a bit about him. Most famously is the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, Daf Lamed Gimel. It's easy to remember where that Gemara is, because it's the Gemara that we always talk about on Lag Baomer. So it's in Daf Lamed Gimel in Masechet Shabbat, the famous Agadah about Shimon bar Yochai and his son Elazar hiding in the cave from the Romans, the miracles that occurred there, and etc. I'll come back to that later in the evening. But if we assume that he is the character in the story and we interpret the actions and we know something about his personality, then we're inclined to interpret the story in one way. It would be an interesting educational experiment to blind the identity of this Tana and have different control groups read the Gemara and interpret it differently based upon their knowledge or their lack of knowledge of who the figure is. But, you know, if I tell you a story about someone you know and you have a certain preconceived notion about that person, you tend to read the story through the prism of what you know about that person. And that might color the way that we read this Gemara, and it may have colored the way that that Mefarshei HaAgadah, who were working with this Nusach, that it's Elazar ben Shimon, read the Gemara. So he was going from a place called Migdal Gedor. Whether or not that's an actual place or a made-up place, I'll discuss momentarily. Those that want to identify it as an actual place point to something up in the Galil, maybe near Hamat Gader of today, you know, where you go to see the alligators. Perhaps it's connected to that area of the world. As Maaseh Shebo Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, mi Migdal Gador, mi Beit Rabo. He was coming home from yeshiva. He was coming from his Rebbe's house. V'haya rachuv al chamor u'metayel al sfat nahar. He was riding on his donkey along the riverbank. All of these facts are, when it, unpacking an Agadah, you should be mindful of all the different symbols. Right? So you have this character, and he's coming from his Rebbe's house, and he is riding on a donkey, and he's going, and we have the name of perhaps a mythic location, and he's going along a river bank. Yesterday I was teaching in my other class, I was teaching a short Agnon story, and I had the students take out their yellow highlighter. It's a story that's really quite surrealistic, a very short story, quite surrealistic, full of symbols. But before you can interpret the symbols, you have to first identify them, right? Not everything is a symbol. But even once you have all of the symbols, you can't always necessarily line them up in a neat row. Particularly in a kind of surrealistic story, where if we assume that there's some influence of Freud and the unconscious and dream interpretation, we're mindful of what the Gemara in Brachot says, Ein chalom bleed varim betelim. That's the way it is in a dream. You know, you see all types of things, and Sigmund can put you on the couch and interpret those dreams. But even Sigmund says sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, even though it might be some kind of symbol of something else. But that's the way the unconscious works. It throws in all types of red herrings into the dream. And if you try to batten down each symbol, it's like trying to make a bed with a sheet that's too short. You can get it around three corners, but when you pull it over the fourth, it's going to pop up somewhere else because there isn't necessarily a coherent explanation to each and every detail. In Agadah, at least in Agadah like this, which presents itself as perfectly realistic, presumably the symbols mean things, and we should be able to say something about that. Excuse me. Hayarachuv al chamor mitayal svati nahar v'samach simcha gdola v'hayta dato gassa alav. He was extra happy, and his mind was gassa. His mind had grown fat, meaning, like we say colloquially in English, look how big his head is, right? He's got a swollen head, right? Meaning he was feeling a little bit maybe excessive self pride, presumably in his accomplishments, his intellectual achievements at his Rebbe's house in yeshiva. Mipnei shelamad Torah harbe, because he had learned so much Torah. Right away, we have a presentation of, before we know anything at all about what's going to be happening in the rest of the Agadah, we have a presentation which seems to be painting a critical portrait of Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar. I'm going to keep making it. There's something corrupt in the hard drive tonight. I keep saying Shimon ben Elazar. No, Elazar ben Shimon. I'm putting an asterisk in the conversation. You needn't correct me each time. I'm going to continue to make that mistake throughout the evening. The Tana in our story in the Bavli is Elazar ben Shimon. So, but he's presented in a certain critical way, in a harsh way, that he's feeling the da'ato gassa alav cannot be easily interpreted as a positive virtue, right? There's a certain kind of arrogance going on because of the quantity of Torah that he had studied bevet Rabbo. Top of daf kaf omud beis. Nizdamen lo adam echad shahaya michuar biyoter. And along the way he encounters a very ugly man. I mean, Pshutokim Ashmo, we're talking about a man who's very ugly, right? He's just not an attractive fellow. Maybe he's missing a tooth, and maybe, you know, one eye is a little runny. He's maybe got the hunchback, you know, his features are not, whatever the aesthetic markers are in the times of Chazal, this guy doesn't have it. Hayam Michuar Biyoter. Very ugly. Amarlo, Shalom Alecha, Rebbe. He sees Reb Elazar ben Shimon riding away. He says, "Hello, Rabbi." Presumably, I guess this was like, you know, even in the times of Chazal, there were celebrities. I mean, one wonders how he recognized that this was, a great rabbi. Whether he knew that it was, you know, the name and the identity of the person, or he just recognized him as a card-carrying member of the society of Chazal, is not clear. But Rabbi Elazar was apparently identified, recognized as a sage. And the ugly man, I'll call him the ugly man for the remainder, says to him, Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi. V'lo hechzir lo. Rabbi Elazar does not respond. Amar lo, Reka. Rabbi Elazar says to him, you reka is like rake, you empty, you're like a boar, right? A boor, you're like a boor v'am ha'aretz. Why is a boor a boor? Because he's empty. What's a boor? What? Mayim ein bo, and afilu nachashim v'akravim ein lo, ein bo. He's just devoid. He's worthless. So he says the Mireka. It's a critique of the ugly man. Kama michuar oto haish. How ugly this man is. Shema kol b'nei ircha michuarin kamotcha. Perhaps all of the people of your town are as ugly as you. Well, this is a very harsh statement for Rabbi Elazar to make. There is an attempt in.
Why does he refer to him in the third person and then in the second person? It's a little strange.
Well, in other words, maybe it's like a stage aside. Maybe it's like indirect speech. What?
I'd like to say something. I'm sorry, I have my hand raised, but I guess you can't see it.
Yeah, Yehudi, I've told you many times, I'm not looking at your picture. I'm looking at the Gemara. So if you want to say something, either say it or click on the raise hand button next to your name on the participants panel.
All right, two things. Reka, you don't have to go to any source other than Tanakh to understand what that means. Vayetlak tu el yiftach anashim rekim vayetzu u imo. Reka is the rekim is the way Tanakh would call what in rabbinic language would be Amarasim. Now, though, keep in mind, Amaris in the Tanakh means the nobility.
Means something else.
And the second point about Otoha Ish, they often call Jesus Otoha Ish.
Yes, although interesting, that's
basically is not a compliment. It's like talking about a person. Like Tanakh also does that.
Yeah. You know, so I looked at this, and I considered that option. In other words, Otoha Ish is an insult, and Jesus is often referred to as Oto Aish, at least in censored versions of the Gemara, and then the censored version, the euphemism becomes the actual usage of the word. But I'm not certain that every Oto Aish is a reference to Jesus. Sometimes an Oto Aish is just that guy, right? Sometimes the cigar is just the cigar. So I'm not sure that there's anything, I don't think that there's any, I didn't see any interpretation that tries to bring in anything Christian or Jesus or anything here, right? And it's not clear that this particular reference to someone as Oto Aish is always carries that pejorative. Although there might be, I mean, somebody says such a thing, but I did not find such a thing. So Shemekol B'nei Ircha.
I'll search it a little, see what we can come up with.
Omar lo eini yodea. So he says back to him, look, I don't know. I don't know if all the people in my town are as ugly as me. Ela lech ve'emor le'oman she'asani kama michoar kli zeh she'asita. But you know what you should do, Rabbi? You should go to the craftsman who formed me and tell him what a bad job he did. You should go and tell him that he did not make me very nice. You should tell him how ugly his products are. Ooh, boom! You know, what do they say? You know, like mic drop, right? Right? That's, I mean, what a great response. You know, there's that idea, we have a friend here in Efrat who's got a blog called Treppenwitz. You know what's Treppenwitz? The German expression. It means like stare wit. It's the witty retort you think of as you're leaving the dinner party. It's the witty retort you think of only once you're on the stairs out of the building.
Right? I should have said that.
What?
I should have said that.
Yeah, that's what it is. It comes to you, what I should have said it, right? And this is people that watch, here's a Torah Umad moment for you. People who watch Seinfeld, the character of George is always doing this, right? He walks into Jerry's apartment after suffering an indignity at work, and that's when it strikes him what he should have said to the guy in the break room. So that's Treppenwitz. But here, oh boy, this ugly guy, he's got it. He says, Rabbi Elazar says, oh, Reka, maybe everyone in your town is as ugly as you. And the guy says, I don't know, maybe they are as ugly as me, but you should go and tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu he really messed up by making someone as ugly as me. Ooh. And Rabbi Elazar immediately understands he's overstepped that bound. Kevan sheyada ba'atzmo shechata yarad min hachamor v'nishtatach lefanav. And he immediately knows he sinned through this harsh remark. Rebbe Elazar, he gets down off the donkey and he prostrates himself in front of the ugly man. Now, first of all, this is a significant thing. You have to remember, he was riding on a donkey. So there's already this kind of imbalance in the encounter. Right? The ugly man is on foot and Rebbe Elazar is mounted on his donkey. This is a conversation of unequals. One is not only a higher rank and higher status, but higher stature, right? And as if we're filming this, it makes sense to depict them in this way. There's Rabbi Elazar up. Now, Chazal didn't ride horses,
Right? I mean, in Eretz Yisrael in those days, people did not really ride horses. They rode donkeys. But if we were filming it and we wanted to take a liberty, we would put him on like a mighty steed so that he's up. You know, like all those old, you remember Tevye? Tevye's like walking along and along comes the, you know, the Russian constable. And the constable's up on the horse and he's looking down. And when we film it, when we see things, when we see Tevye from the point of view of the constable on the horseback, the camera is placed up above him, so you see that the little Jew is down and has to look up to the source of power and authority. But here, immediately, Rebbe Lazar switches roles, and he takes the lowly and subservient, the lowly and subservient stature, the lowly and subservient posture. Posture, right? And he is now lowered himself lower than the ugly man. The ugly man really has brought him down, literally brought him down low, taken him down a peg, as we would say.
Two pegs.
Two, three pegs. Va'omar lo na'aniti lecha mecholi. I have offended you. I have oppressed you. I've caused you inui. I've caused you damage, please forgive me. That's the same Lashon we have in the Gemara in the fourth chapter of Brachot with Rabbi Yoshua. Omar lo, eni mochelcha. Ad shetelech lo'oman she'asani v'amar lo kama mechoar kli ze she'asita. Says, I'm not going to forgive you until you go and you have to apologize to Hashem. You've insulted the Creator. This, is, of course, reminds us of the famous story, which may or may not be true, but it doesn't matter whether it's true or not. It's true, even if it didn't happen, of the Chafetz Chaim. Remember a couple of years ago, they found that video footage of the Chafetz Chaim walking in the street? Did you see that?
I think so.
Yeah, it's worth saying. It's only like 15 seconds old. Chafetz Chaim looks like he's about...
There was a photograph from Vienna.
What?
There was an international congress, I think,
at the Aguda. Yeah, it was walking into an Aguda conference in...
In Vienna, yeah.
It was in Vienna? I don't know. But you Google it, you'll find it in a second. Chafetz Chaim looks like he's about 4 feet tall. He looks like a shriveled little... you think of like a little old man, this is little old man. And he's in very simple, threadborn things. And he's being escorted by these gvirim, right? You know, men in... men in pelts, quite literally, these big guys with, you know, and the Chafetz Chaim's in this little threadbare cloth coat with that little cap, you know, like a fisherman's cap, and he's walking and he's shuffling in, he's a little old man, but the story about the Chafetz Chaim that that he's on a train or something, and somebody in the train compartment is rude to him. And the Chafetz Chaim, you know, who was, min hane'elavim velo min ha'aluvim, he just kind of, you know, takes it. And he moves aside. And somebody says to the offending party, you know who that is? This is the Chafetz Chaim. The holiest Jew of his generation. The holiest Jew of his century. So the man runs over and says, oh, Rebbe, ha'neiti lecha mecholi, forgive me, I didn't know that you were the Chafetz Chaim. I didn't know that you were Rabbi Yisrael Meir Cohen Kagan. I didn't know that you were the author of the Chafetz Chaim, the author of the Mishnah Berurah. Right? So the Chafetz Chaim says, no, you don't understand. I don't care that you insulted me. The Chafetz Chaim forgives you. Right? I can forgive you for insulting the Chafetz Chaim. I can't insult you. I can't forgive you for insulting, you know, you thought I was just Stam a little old man. Stam a Jew. Right? I don't mind that you insulted the Chafetz Chaim. I mind that you insulted Stam a Jew. So that's that story of the Chafetz Chaim, whether it's true or not is irrelevant, resonates here. There's something else story. The man says, I can't forgive you because you've insulted God. Right? You've criticized the Creator. So go and apologize to the Creator. Hayam mitayel acharav ad shegi el iro. So Rabbi Elazar is following in his footsteps until they get to his city, to the city of this man. Yatsu v'nei iro likrato. and all of the townsmen come out. V'hayu omrim lo shalom alecha Rebbe. Hello, greetings to you, Rabbi Elazar. They see Rabbi Elazar's coming in. There's a famous holy Jew. Rabbi, Mori. Amar lahem, the ugly man, says to the people, Lemi atem korim Rabbi. Who are you calling Rabbi? Who are you calling Master? Who are you calling Teacher? Amrulo, lezeh shemitayel acharecha. That fellow who is following along. Amar lahem, im zeh Rabbi, al yirbu kemoto bi Yisrael. If he's my rabbi, may there not be many like him amongst the Jewish people. Amru lo mipnei ma. Why would you say such a thing? Amar lehem kach v'kach asali. And he tells them the story. Amru lo afal pichen mecholo. But okay, nevertheless, you should forgive him. Why? Sh'adam gadol b'torahu. He is a great sage. Who amar lahem bishvilchem hareini mochelo. So in your merit, in the merit of you, my townsmen, because you asked so nicely, hareini mochelo, I will forgive him. Ubilvad shelo yehe ragil lasot ken. But on a condition, maybe he means that on the condition that Rabbi Elazar kind of promises never to do it again, he kind of demonstrates or shows his resolve for the future that he will not act in this way going forth. Miyad nichnas Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon v'derash. So Rabbi Elazar, he immediately says a drasha. I mean, maybe it means that he like went into the shul and started giving a she'ur. Or maybe it means that he just, you know, kind of wanted to produce a lesson to turn the whole thing into a teachable moment. Le'olam yehe adat David, what? How appropriate it is that this is what we're learning for your father. Le'olam yehe adam rach kekane ve'al yehe kashe ke'erez. A person should always be as flexible as a reed and not rigid as the cedar, the mighty cedar. Right? In other words, this Agadah is inserted here to our Gemara because of the earlier discussion of how the reed grows on the water and the cedar, how the cedar grows and which is going to be uprooted in the wind and the storm, etc. You know, there was a terrible thing here today in Haifa. This giant old tree, 80, 90 years old, fell over, collapsed on a building. People were injured, right? But so because of that discussion of the water and the water and the reed and the erez and the cedar, right, so that's how this Gemara comes up, because it becomes the aphorism that's produced through this story. Rabbi Elazar says a person should be as flexible as a reed and not rigid as the cedar.
Is the lesson about Rabbi Elazar, or is the lesson about
Hold on. We have to interpret that. Lefichach zacha kana litol hemenu. And in that merit, in the merit of the flexibility of the reed, that's why the reed is chosen to be the quill with which we write the Torah, the Tefillin, and the Mezuzah. Period. And so, David, you ask a good question. What is Rabbi Elazar saying? Is he saying that he? Well, first of all, what does it mean? Within the mashal of our story, without pointing to who is the reed and who is the erez, what is the attribute of the reed? In what way must someone be flexible?
Not to stand in their place and not be willing to you know, stand their position and not give up, not to give in.
Right. So which one was that?
Well, the ugly man did that. He was willing in the end to forgive him, even though he hadn't
hadn't yet proven himself. Yeah. But it's also possible that Rabbi Elazar was speaking about himself. Right. He realizes he's, in other words, there are two reactions that people have when their shortcomings are pointed out to them. usually what people do is, you know, if someone tells me that I'd done something wrong, if someone tells me you weren't beseder, you acted rudely. So, you know, my natural reaction might be, I acted rudely? You should have heard what that guy said. You know why I said that to him? Because he's this and that. Right? But that's not what Rabbi Elazar does. Right? That's not what Rabbi Elazar does. Rabbi Elazar immediately jumps off the mule, casts himself down, begs forgiveness. When forgiveness is denied, he runs after the man. Maybe he's the one that learns his lesson. Maybe he's the one that's flexible. Maybe he's the one that brings himself down low. Instead of being the tall, mighty cedar, he's the lowly, flexible reed. But presumably the pshat is like the former, not the latter. Presumably the pshat is that Rabbi Elazar is praising the ugly man for his flexibility in accepting the apology, even though the apology cannot be properly implemented, because in fact he can't go and ask God's forgiveness, right? You know, it's another Chafetz Chaim story. You know, like the Chafetz Chaim story is about the feathers. It was a mashal of the Chafetz Chaim about Lashon Hara. You know, the Chafetz Chaim had very strong feelings about Lashon Hara, which is why his very name becomes the. Yeah, he wrote a lot of books. How come he's not called by the name of any of those? It's the Chafetz Chaim. It's his work on the laws of Lashon Hara, which becomes his by name. Because that was the thing that was most passionately about, even though he seemed to feel very passionate about Shmirat Shabbat and wrote a lot about that as well, and lots of other mitzvot. So in the Chafetz Chaim, there's this idea that, you know, there's certain Lashon Hara that, you know, once it gets out there, you can't, you know, the horse has left the barn. Lock in the barn doesn't do anything. And it's the idea of, you know, like a feather pillow. You slice open the feather pillow and you disperse all the feathers wherever they go. Right? It's, you know, if you're a little kid, it's a lot of fun. But now go and pick up every feather. You can't.
Right? There's Rabbi Sack.
There's one second. Right? There's no way you can do it because, you know, they've just dispersed all over the place. And that's the effects of the Lashon Hara. So that idea is also quite a few. Yes, Yehudi.
You have to see in this story, you know, something that so far you haven't mentioned, but to me it's the most obvious point of all, which is the man starts off thinking he's really hot stuff because he's learned a lot of Torah. And the term is used, gas. Now, gas is a very uncomplimentary term to apply to a person who's presumably a Talmid Chacham. On top of that, his behavior is disgusting. I mean, he doesn't even say shalom to the person who greets him. And then on top of that, he insults the person. In other words, it seems to me the story is saying to you, a person could be the biggest gadol of a Torah, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that person is going to behave properly by another mechavero. In fact, that's why I wasn't so happy when you used the term holy here, because I think the whole point of the story is, you can get the most enormous amount of book learning imaginable. That does not in the least bit mean that your behavior is going to follow what the book says. Okay? This man's behavior is gross. Okay? It's gross. It's prust, if you don't mind my using
it. It's gas. It's gas is the word that's used.
It's gas, right. I'm just trying to throw a few words around in a language other than Ivrit in order to get across that, you know, he is Kashe Ke'eres. This isn't behaving, you know, I mean, this behavior is so gross that it's hard to, of course the man can say, who are you calling Rabbi, if he doesn't behave properly, who's he going around teaching to behave? who's he going around teaching Torah to him either? In other words, if this is the way a Talmud Chacham behaves, then excuse me, you know, what's the story about, then take his Torah, pack them up, and send them out to dry? Because if he goes around insulting ordinary people like the way he just did, I mean, you know, in other words, I think this is a really, you know, very strong denunciation of people who think that they're hot stuff just because they've learned a great deal.
Yep.
Professors, all kinds of other people of that nature, right. You know? Right. And you know, it's a sort of a, in other words, I don't think they're trying to portray this guy in any way other than negatively.
Yeah, I think so. The question is, though, is it a model of tshuva? Does he learn his lesson? If, in fact, the...
Oh, because we don't know the sequel. Okay? We just know that the story basically, in other words, what we do know is that after the story, after the incident takes place, he says people should be rocked, which is essentially the way the story started. That makes an inclusio out of it. But, and the coolest part also was before, so the main thing is what's in the middle. Okay.
Well, that, no, I'm not sure. In other words,
but what's in the middle?
In other words, his statement when he gets to the town, and the message that he derives from it, I think the pshat of the Agadah is that he's saying, he's praising the ugly man as having those virtues of the kaneh, of the reed, and he's grateful to him for the man's flexibility in accepting his apology. And he's praising him for saying, and that midah makes him worthy to be the creator of holiness, of our most holy ritual objects. He is now compared to the kulmus of the Torah and the tefillin and the mezuzah. So if that's the meaning
that they're using to get the point across, you know, there's times in the Talmud where the story is more than whatever the point is. I mean, in Masechet Kiddushin, it was like, you know, they make the point of what's Kibbut Aryeh, and then they tell stories about what's Kibbut Aryeh, and the stories make the point 10 times better than anything that they actually say. Right. Okay, in other words. And Akadah, I think you have to realize, to me, if I look at that pop, I would say that this story is worth everything else on the top and a great deal more.
Okay.
Because essentially it's getting across the point that it's not enough to sit there and learn.
But, I think that's the hidden curriculum here of this Akadah. Chazal, just by the way, Chazal were not shy about depicting biblical characters as possessing very distinct human flaws. The Bible itself is not shy about saying such a thing about biblical characters, but Chazal were not shy of saying such a thing. And here we're portraying a very, very human being in all three dimensions. We all can relate. You mentioned that we should be disgusted by Rebbe Lazar, but yet we all know people just like him. And we are all at times guilty. I don't know, all of us. I know some of you are real tzaddikim. I know some of you. I mean, I know some of you many years. And I've known you to be very kind and thoughtful and generous people. But, you know, each of us can probably think of a moment in their life where this happened to me yesterday. This happened to me yesterday. I have a very close friend who I speak to on an almost daily basis. And I was trying to say something humorous. I'm a funny guy. What can I say? But in order to be a funny guy, that means you have to be prepared that every now and then one of your jokes is going to drop like a lead balloon. And I said something that I thought was teasing in a humorous way. And it hurt his feelings. And it hurt his feelings. And I felt terrible about it afterwards. I called him up. I waited a few hours. I called him up again to apologize. We're not going to end a relationship of 35 years over this, but it happens, right? We're all guilty of these types of things. We're all guilty in the workplace, you know, whether your job is being a rabbi or your job is something else, we're all guilty in the workplace, you know, particularly in the workplace where we're not always in horizontal relationships with people, right? The workplace is often a situation where we're in vertical relations with people. There are people, most of us have people that work above us, and most of us have people that work below us, and that creates a kind of strange dynamic. Here, the Gemara quite literally depicts them as not being peers. One is on high and one is down low. And then that's the visual irony, that the one on high is brought down low or brings himself down low because he recognizes the virtue and the stature and the truth that the ugly man possesses. So I think it's by saying that
this relates to the story about Shimon Bar Yochai and his son
Shimon Bar Yochai's son. So if indeed this is the son of Shimon Bar Yochai, what we know about him, presumably our story here predates the story in Masechet Shabbat, but who knows?
I say postdates, because that's how the person got the way he is. In other words, he spent 12 years completely cut off from contact with other human beings. Okay?
Right.
Even when he comes out, he's still basically going ahead and giving people dirty looks that makes them drop dead.
Right, well, except for the fact that his father had spent the same amount of time in the cave, and he didn't. He learned a different lesson.
I don't know if you mentioned it or not, but I was looking. There are Gersot that say that actually this story is not his son.
I mentioned that at the beginning. But I said that I was going to treat this as the son of Shimon Bar Yochai.
Either way, they were in the cave together, so it doesn't necessarily make a difference in terms of that.
Right.
I know that in terms of the cave story, you see a degree of progress in that. There's the famous in Masechet Brachot. There's the famous machlokes between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai about whether you need to work or not, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says the vikita bo yomam v'layla, you don't need to work, and then that story certainly seems to come before the cave.
Well, that's the lesson that he learns after the year following, when he comes out and he understands that all of the things that he criticized, the paving of roads and the building of bridges and the building of marketplaces, etc., which he saw as, you know, mere vanities of this world that are only there to tempt us or to cause us to sin, right? Bridges are there to collect tolls, and marketplaces are there for the women of ill repute to have a place to ply their wares. And he understands that Yeshuvo Shel Olam is not inherently a bad thing.
So that, the fact they use the word rake makes me feel an echo of that story. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're not. Yes. I just learned Torah, and you. What have you got?
Right.
You know?
That's exactly the point I was trying to make.
So there is a Yehudi. If you don't mind, Yehudi, let me just try to get through some material in the little bit of time we have left.
Okay. I don't mind.
There is a kind of interpretive. I hadn't meant to spend the whole evening just on this Agadah. But since it's so rich, we need to explore it. There is a kind of interpretive path in the more pre-modern interpreters of the Gemara, which feel the need to explain or to mitigate Rebbe Lazar's action. There's no doubt that he has caused offense. The question is, was it deliberate or was it unintentional? And there is a kav in the Iyun Yaakov, which is a perush in the Ein Yaakov, in the commentaries on the Agadah, they point out this idea that the Gemara in Brachot on Daf Kof Zayin Omid Beis has an idea that an Am Haaretz basically should never initiate a conversation with a Talmid Chacham. That if a Talmid Chacham has something to say to the Am Haaretz, he'll say it, but that you shouldn't, so that this offering of the greeting, Shalom Aleichem Rebbe, Rabbi, Rabbi, Mori, Mori, it was improper. And when Rebbe Lazar says that he's Mechoar, he wasn't referring to his to his physical state. He was referring to the indelicate social habits that the man demonstrated. And the question, are all the people of your town like this, was an indication that he was aware that this kind of nimus, the kind of custom of Chazal, the custom in the day where simple folk did not greet rabbis, was not a universal custom. And he was asking, is this in fact the custom in your town? And the man himself, however, not being a learned man, misinterpreted the statement to be exactly what it sounded like. Okay, so that, I don't know, to me, that doesn't sound quite so convincing, but it's important to acknowledge that, you know, that was a way of interpreting Agadah for a while. My very good friend, Rabbi Yitzchak Blau, who's our neighbor here in Alon Shvut, has this book called Fresh Fruit and Vintage Wine, The Ethics and Wisdom of the Agadah. It was published a few years ago. And he has a few readings. There's probably 40 different Agadot that he analyzes. And he's trying to do it in order to, you know, present what the ethical teaching of the Agadot are. So among the different points that he makes here, what, Yehudi, I'm muting you because whatever's going on there is not
sure.
He says in other words, the ambiguity at the end of the story, as to whether or not he's talking about himself or he's talking about the ugly man, is reflective in our ambiguous understanding of how to view him, right? He may have been criticizing his own harsh response at the beginning of the story. If so, his teaching reveals that he has internalized the lesson and has kind of functions as a model for a Baal Tshuva, and in that regard, it's particularly important that Chazal were prepared to portray their own selves as flawed in order to also demonstrate their ability to overcome their flaws and to grow. He then points out that others, as Yehudi pointed out, and it should be obvious, that it's particularly important that the story is portrayed from him having just exited the yeshiva. And it's a cautionary tale for the arrogance that sometimes can be the unintended byproduct of that kind of experience. That a person can walk away from that instead of being humbled and gracious and having grown, walk out with the exact opposite learning. I'm better. I know more. I'm more virtuous. Right? And the fact that the story, because the story could have been told, we didn't need to know that he was leaving his rabbi's house. We don't even need to know that he was feeling good about himself or had a swollen head because he had learned a lot of Torah. The story would still stand on its own if we were to cut off the first two lines of the Agadah.
Rabbi Sack?
Yehudi, please, I'm sorry. Please let me get through the rest of the material tonight because
that's
we're on the
clock.
That's
where I was going.
We're on the
clock. See where it says four lines down?
Yehudi, I value your contributions, but I'm going to mute you now because I need to get through the rest of the material so that I can end
on
time. Obviously, the connection to Shimon Bar Yochai and Elazar in the cave fits very well into this interpretation because what happened? They spend 12 years studying Torah in this miraculous yeshiva of the cave up in Pkiin, where they're, you know, like yeshiva guys. What does it mean to be in yeshiva? You learn. and food miraculously appears. All your needs are miraculously taken care of. You're protected from all outside distractions and influences. You need water, there's a spring. You need food, there's carob. You need your clothing taken care of, they have some kind of magical, mystical laundry of sorts in the cave. And you're sitting with the greatest Rebbe, Shimon Bar Yochai, and the secret mysteries of life and the Kabbalah are being revealed to you. After all, according to tradition, that's where the Zohar is composed. And they come out into the world after 12 years, and Rebbe Elazar sees a guy plowing his field. The most kind of this worldly activity. And he zaps him, he burns him up. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "La'achrivo la'miyatzatim chizru l'maratechem." Did you come out of the cave in order to destroy my world? Back to the cave, and they go back for another year. The Maharal suggests the symbolism of the name of this place that he's coming from, Migdal Gedor, which later, you know, commentaries and Limudei Eretz Yisrael folk who may have been a little more familiar with the land of Israel and the Yeshuvim of the Galil than the Maharal was sitting in Prague. Some have actually tried to identify this as an actual place, but the Maharal takes it for granted that Migdal Gedor, in otherwise unnamed location in the Gemara, is a symbolic name. It's a metaphorical name. What is a Migdal and what is a Gedor? The place name here has symbolic import, writes my friend Rabbi Blau, quoting the Maharal. As Maharal notes, it is made up of terms referring to towers, Migdal, and fences, Gedor or Geder. The tower symbolizes a high point from which those on top can look down on others, while the fence connotes rigid boundaries. The bank of the river along which he is walking or riding might also represent such a boundary. The scholar who chooses to follow Rebbe Elazar's path draws a sharp dividing line between the Beit Midrash and the outside world, says the Maharal. But I would add, also draws sharp boundary lines, class lines, Talmidei Chachamim and simple folk. And a simple folk who, after all, what did this Bor V'am Haaretz do? Right? Did he burp in the presence of a great rabbi? No. What did he do? He said, Shalom Alecha Rabbi. Right? Today, if somebody said that to me, next time you see me, give it a try, I would take that as a mark of respect. But when you live in a world with such sharp boundaries and such rigid class structure, the Migdal and the Gader, so even something like that can present itself as an affront, leading to an outrageous response on the part of Rebbe Elazar. Those are some of the lessons that come out of this Haggadah. It happens that this perek is full of very very important agadot, and we will see more of them next week. Hopefully, we will call it a night here. And we'll pick up again next week. Laila Tov. Laila Tov.